Welcome to the Midlife Wellness MP podcast. I'm Kim Hefner, a family nurse practitioner, menopause specialist, and your host of the Midlife Wellness MP podcast, where we dive deep into the multifaceted world of midlife and menopause. In this episode, I had the privilege of hosting the renowned Jen Stevens, a New York Times bestselling author and a leading voice in the realm of intermittent fasting and holistic wellness. With her transformative personal journey of losing 80 pounds and maintaining her weight loss, Jen has become a beacon of inspiration for countless individuals seeking to embrace a healthier lifestyle. During our conversation, we delved into her latest book, The 28-Day Fast Start Day by Day, and explore the profound impact of hormones and fasting on overall well-being. Jen shared invaluable insights on overcoming barriers to fasting and weight loss, offering practical strategies for navigating the complexities of midlife and menopause. Her wealth of knowledge and unwavering commitment to empowering others has made her a beloved figure in the health and wellness community. Join us as we unravel the secrets to holistic wellness and thriving in midlife with Jen Stevens. To learn more about Jen, her podcast, and her books, visit her website at jenstevens.com. You can listen to the Midlife Wellness MP podcast on most podcast platforms and find me on YouTube. I know your time is valuable. Thank you for being here and enjoy the episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Kim Hefner. I'm a board-certified family nurse practitioner, and I am certified in menopause. And today I'm joined with Jen Stevens, fasting expert. So Jen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So you've been busy. You have multiple best-selling books, including Fast, Feast, and Repeat. That's a New York Times bestseller. You have two podcasts, right?
Right.
And you've lost a significant amount of weight through fasting since, like, what, 2015? Is that
2014,
right?
2014, yeah. Oh, wow. I'll be coming up to my, in the end, like August of 2024 will be 10 years that I will have been living an intermittent fasting lifestyle. I lost 80 pounds and have kept it off even as I went through menopause. And I'm wearing a pair of jeans today that I bought in either 2015 or 2016. I was trying to remember, and they just still fit me.
So talk just a little bit about, you know, how you started, give a little background, and then we'll just dive in.
Okay. Well, my background is I'm an elementary teacher. So people might think, what? How in the world is a teacher, you know, writing books about fasting and having podcasts about fasting? And it's basically because I, like I said, I'm a teacher. And when I find something, I like to teach it to people. And, you know, like probably so many listeners, I struggled with my weight. Even before, when I really wasn't struggling with my weight, I was still like obsessed with dieting back in the day, you know, even when I was a great weight and I was in high school watching my mom count calories. So I had just been really a yo-yo cereal dieter, and I've always been fascinated with how the body works and fascinated with, you know, the concepts of nutrition and weight loss and what's going on. And so I really read everything I could get my hands on over the years and tried different things. And some things worked well for my body. Some things, most things did not, but eventually kept yo-yoing up higher and higher. So I was either on a restrictive diet, and these diets got crazier and more restrictive as I got older, because the things I'd done before didn't work. Like simple calorie counting stopped being effective. And so then you're like going to the doctor and getting prescription diet pills. And, you know, now that's working, and suddenly that's not effective. So, you know, you've heard this a million times, and listeners have probably lived it. And so every time I would just get tired of, you know, whatever it was I was doing at the time, I would stop doing it and the weight would come back plus more. So it finally got to the point, you know, I went through a period probably from 2009 to 2012, somewhere around in there to 2014, really probably came to a head in 2012 when I just kind of gave up, because I thought, I have worked so hard at this. I have, you know, restricted and done this diet and that diet, and I just keep getting heavier and heavier. So I, you know, embraced this is who I am. I went through the whole intuitive eating. You know, I'm not going to weigh. And even still, I would come back a little bit, try a little of this. But over that time, my weight really went crazy. And I ended up on a cruise with my family. It was spring of 2014. hadn't been weighing, but then I saw pictures of myself after that cruise. Couldn't believe that's what I looked like, even though you know, look at yourself in the mirror every day, but somehow it's different in a photo. Came home from that cruise and said, I've got to do something. Pulled my scale down off the shelf, got on it. I weighed 210 pounds. And at 5'5", that put me in the obese category. So I was like, I've got to do something. Had a few little false starts from then till about August of 2014. But in August of 2014, that is when I started intermittent fasting and never stopped. So here I am today. Thank goodness I never stopped. But like I said, my original goal was to lose 75 pounds because I thought, okay, I'm 210. I want to get to 135. That just seemed like, you know, like a pie in the sky. I could never get there. There's no way. But it was a weight where I knew I had felt good before. When I got there, thanks to intermittent fasting, I realized I still had a little more fat to go. Ended up losing right at about 80 pounds. Haven't weighed since 2017, so I don't know what the number would be today, but I know my pants still fit and my clothes still fit, and that's what matters. But finally, I was able to stop the yo-yoing and figure out something that worked so well for my body.
That's awesome. I've heard you talk about your honesty pants. I love that. That's awesome. Well, I want this conversation to really add a ton of value to menopausal women. This is by far the struggle that I hear from my patients and women everywhere. It's this mid-belly fat that they just can't seem to get rid of. And I really just want to help women during these times and even post-menopausal. A lot of times we're gearing our talk towards menopause or in that transition. And then there's comments from post-menopausal women. Well, what are we supposed to do? So hopefully we can, you know, cover our bases and include all of women that are struggling with this area. So Jen, why should intermittent fasting be a part of the menopausal toolkit for women?
All right. And I do want to, you know, point out, I am not a hormone expert. You are, other people are, but I happen to know people who are hormone experts, thank goodness, that have helped me. And I'll talk more about my own journey with bioidentical hormone replacement therapy coming up. But intermittent fasting works really, really well with one hormone in particular, and that's the hormone insulin. And, you know, every person has insulin. You know, most people might not think of insulin unless they listen to a lot of different health things. They might only think of insulin as something that if you have diabetes, you need it. And they might not understand that insulin plays a role in so much of our metabolic health. If we have chronic high levels of insulin all the time, that is not good. You know, people think of, you know, type 1 diabetes, and your insulin's too low, you need more of it. But we actually don't want to have too much of it. And so type 2 diabetes, for example, and the metabolic years of poor health leading up to any type of, you know, type 2 diagnosis is full of high levels of insulin. We've probably all heard of insulin resistance, and that's like the path that we're going down as we end up with chronically high levels of insulin. What really helped me to understand insulin's effect on our health even more was reading Dr. Benjamin Bickman's book, Why We Get Sick. You know, he connects having chronic high levels of insulin with so many of the chronic lifestyle conditions that are around us. And so, you know, one thing about our hormones, though, is that they work together. And we forget that. I mean, I've thought of insulin through my intermittent fasting lens. You know, fasting is the best way to bring your insulin down and normalize your insulin levels, defeat insulin resistance, become metabolically healthy. But our other hormones work with insulin and all work together. So after I went through menopause, you know, then our bodies stopped producing estrogen and progesterone and the other sex hormones, testosterone, the same way. And then things change. And we were like, oh, those hormones were doing more than just, you know, like giving us a period or helping us, you know, get pregnant, or, you know, they're more than just fertility. And so I've really learned a lot along the way beyond just intermittent fasting. But intermittent fasting is great for hormones, for women, for men, for all of us, despite what some people may have heard about, oh, women shouldn't fast. You heard that one before?
Yes. Yes, and I have. We'll talk about that.
Sure. Well, what I wanted to say about that is it's super frustrating for me. You know, I would like to go back and talk about my diet history all those years. And I did some crazy things, including things that doctors gave me. I was doing highly restrictive diets. There's a doctor-supervised HCG diet. A doctor gave me that. A doctor gave me diet pills. I did a diet. It was called the Howard diet. You ate 800 calories a day. And then on the weekend you had, but nobody ever said to me, over restriction is really bad for your hormones. And when you go on a starvation diet, that is terrible for your hormones. But women have been getting advice to go on these crazy, overly restrictive diets forever. And no one ever worried about what our hormones were doing. And suddenly people are saying, oh, but fasting, no, that's a little risky. That's dangerous. And so it's sad, but a little bit ironic that somehow fasting is perceived as being some sort of like dramatic, overly restrictive way of eating, when in reality, all those diets that I did over the years, those were overly restrictive. And it has to do with, you know, the issues of low calorie dieting, when you slow your metabolic rate, so many things. That's when our hormones say, oh gosh, we're in danger. We need to, you know, stop having our period and all of that. We've all heard of that before. Over restriction, over exercising, all of those things, the low calorie diets we've been told to do for decades are terrible for our hormones. And somehow in this current period of time that we're living in, still no one's talking about that. But for some reason, fasting is like lumped under, this is what is really dangerous for your hormones. When people follow intermittent fasting in a safe, well-recommended way of doing it, it is not overly restrictive. It is actually less restrictive than those diets that we did in the past. And you know, intermittent fasting is not synonymous with over-restriction. You know, the title of my book is Fast, Feast, Repeat, not fast, eat a little diet meal, work out hard, repeat. You know, so
right.
Over-restriction is very bad for a woman's body. Fasting can be overly restrictive, but if you are honoring your body, nourishing your body well, fasting mindfully, following well-researched recommendations, fasting is not overly restrictive.
Right. I am not about restricting at all. No. I just feel like it is so much pressure on women. And not only that, I think about fasting, and that's truly what healed my body. It was so powerful. It fixed my gut, my inflammation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it changed my life. And that's initially when I reached out to you, actually, the first time, and learned so much about you and what you did. But yeah, I'm not all about restriction and calorie restriction and all of that. We can talk about that. But definitely with our hormones, things do change in menopause. And I just feel like people need to understand that when our estrogen declines, it changes the way our insulin works. So it is real changes. We become less carb tolerant, meaning we don't burn food for energy like we used to. So these things that women are experiencing are real changes. And that's why I think I'm so excited to talk more about fasting, because I definitely think it should be a part of our protocol for menopause. So what is, as far as the science behind fasting, just in general, just a quick overview, what is the evidence for fasting?
Well, there's so much. I couldn't go into all of it. Obviously, there's so much evidence. And if somebody is looking for a really good, just overview, you need to look for, it's an article written by Dr. Mark Mattson. He worked at Johns Hopkins. He's been doing neurological research for decades. He's actually been an intermittent faster himself since the 1980s. But he wrote an article that was in the New England Journal of Medicine, December of 2019. So if you just search for Mark Mattson, December 2019, I think it was December 26th of 2019, New England Journal of Medicine, he wrote an article about just all the scientific review of the benefits of intermittent fasting. And I heard through the grapevine, and he actually confirmed it to me. I interviewed him for my podcast later after this episode came out, after that article came out. But he was asked by the editors of the New England Journal of Medicine to write that article because at that time, a lot of doctors, nurse practitioners like you, a lot of medical professionals were hearing from patients who were coming in and wanted to know more about fasting, but the doctors didn't know enough about it to guide them. So the New England Journal of Medicine asked him, as an expert on intermittent fasting, to write this review article for the physician so that they would have something to look at. So he did. And it was really an exciting time in the intermittent fasting world. That's really like where I think it all kind of flipped. Because prior to that, I was running some really large Facebook groups and people would join and we said, you know, why do you want to join the group? You know, we wanted to see they were real people. They knew what they were joining, you know, not a bot. But before that, it was always, I want to lose weight. I want to lose weight. I want to lose weight. Suddenly after that article came out, the answers were, I want to get healthy. I want to get healthy. So it was like at that moment, then people realized intermittent fasting is a healthy way to live. I mean, it does so many great things. It lowers our insulin levels, like I talked about before. It lowers it lowers levels of inflammation. It gives our body time to rest and repair. There's a process called autophagy, which we really hadn't been talking about until 2016, which is when the Nobel Prize in Medicine was awarded to a researcher in Japan who was studying autophagy, our body's cellular housekeeping system, and fasting stimulates autophagy. And you know, our body has time to just repair. And if you think about it like this, you know, we have been told for, you know, recent decades, the best thing to do is, you know, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Of course, that was based on a study funded by Kellogg. Surprise, surprise.
Right.
And the best breakfast is cereal, right? Oh, I was surprised right. That study by Kellogg found that to be true, right? But, you know, we had been following start early, eat frequently. In fact, the more meals you can eat, the higher your metabolism is going to be, we were told. And so we tried to follow that advice and look around and we can see it hasn't made us healthier, right? So it turns out constantly putting in more fuel, maybe our metabolic rate will go up, but it's not going to go up enough to counteract the amount of extra fuel you put in to get it. The math doesn't work out in your favor where that's concerned. And your body has to expend a whole lot of resources on constant digestion. And you also get trapped in that blood sugar roller coaster up and down, up and down. You know, you eat, your blood sugar goes up, you're probably insulin resistant now, and then your blood sugar crashes down and now you're starving and then you eat again. So now you're like hangry all the time and you're eating just to catch up with those lows. And when the highs come, you eat again, you know, when it drops again. And so our body has no time to do any healing. It has no time to clean things up. It has no time to repair. And so we feel worse and worse over time. So it turns out that advice to eat small, frequent meals all the time is really not how our bodies are designed to work. We're designed to be what's known as metabolically flexible. And when we're metabolically flexible, when food is coming in, our body knows what to do with that. We can run on the glucose that our body gets from the foods that we eat. And when nothing is coming in, we can use whatever has been stored. We can use glycogen that's been in our liver. We can then start burning fat that our body stored for later. You know, because think about that. We're walking around. When I was 80 pounds heavier than I am right now, I had a tremendous amount of energy stored on my body. And I was storing more and more energy every year. But because I was following the advice to eat all the time, small meals, I was eating frequently, it's like that extra fuel was locked away and I never needed it. Thanks to fasting, and when we fast clean, you know, our insulin levels go down. Insulin is a storage hormone. So if it's high, you really can't tap into fat very well. So when insulin is low, suddenly we're no longer in storage mode. And our body's like, oh, now we can see there is a lot of fuel. So we can actually burn that stored fuel just like it was intended and get down to, you know, a healthy weight.
You're right. And interesting, like, I feel like some of the dietitians, and they still are counseling people to eat frequently for blood sugar stabilization. Have you heard that still?
Oh, yes. And it's just what they were taught as well. You know, curriculums don't change quickly, right? And so if anyone ever has the opportunity to wear a CGM, fascinating. Our blood sugar goes up and down and up and down and up and down, but it does that more when we're in the fed state than when we're in the fasted state. So like I've had the opportunity to wear a CGM multiple times now. And, you know, when I wake up in the morning, let's say I wake up and, you know, my last meal was dinner the night before. Maybe I stopped eating at 7 p.m. and now it's 7 a.m. I'm having coffee. You know, I'll see some gentle blood sugar curves, coffee, black coffee. My liver dumps out a little glycogen. My blood sugar stays within a range. But then eventually my liver's cleared out that extra glycogen and my blood sugar goes down to about, let's say, 78. And then it just stays there steady, 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 steady for the rest of the time till I open my eating window for the day. Our blood sugar doesn't just go down, 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 crash. You know, it doesn't do that. It stays in a steady state. You know, our body flips that metabolic switch. We can start burning fat for fuel. We can produce ketones to fuel our brains. We are meant to be metabolically flexible like that. We are really not meant to be constantly eating.
Right. I am so glad you brought up the continuous glucose monitor. This is one of my favorite tools to use with patients. Mm-hmm. I will have my patients tell me I am eating clean, I am fasting, but I cannot lose weight. I'm doing everything right. So I will send them in the continuous glucose monitor, have them wear it. I'll look at their logs and it is spike up, down, like, well, yeah, this is part of the problem. This is, right. You know, where we need to balance this out. We get this more steady. I feel like it's one of the best tools to make, you know, it collect real-time data. They can see what's going on and then make those dietary and lifestyle choices right then.
Yeah.
And I would take that over counting calories any day. I think
absolutely
it just, that does way more than counting calories.
Well, you see it and you're like, you know, it really helped me to understand simple swaps. Like, for example, you know, testing things out like sourdough bread with avocado and egg on top. My blood sugar went up way high versus Ezekiel bread with avocado and an egg on top. Steady, steady, steady. So you were like, oh, what they said about fiber is true.
You know, right.
Fiber makes a difference.
Especially in the menopausal years, we need to increase our fiber. I mean, that makes a big difference, and our protein. And I do love that the glucose goddess. I really do have my patients, you know, eat in the right food order. I feel like it makes a difference and kind of curbs those spikes. There's so many different things that you can do, but I agree. The continuous glucose monitor is a great tool, and just having your provider order it, or there's companies that will do it. But I would do that way over counting calories any day.
Well, it's true because the counting a calorie, it doesn't tell you what your body is doing after you put that calorie in. And when you think of foods as strictly calories, you miss out on what, like, you know, 100 calorie snack pack of Teddy Grahams, for example, versus 100 calories of nuts is going to hit you completely differently and have a completely different effect on your body.
Right. So I do hear this a lot. I have women that tell me they've been fasting. They either gain weight or they can't lose it. So they're just saying fasting doesn't work for me. How do you respond to that? What do you think is going wrong?
Well, I always ask them a couple questions. I say, okay, first of all, tell me what you were drinking when you were fasting. And 99% of the time, they were not fasting clean because they had followed someone's advice, watched a video, heard someone say, oh, 50 calories or less doesn't break a fast, or oh, diet sodas don't break a fast, or oh, I can add a little cream, MCT oil, creamer, that doesn't break a fast. And actually, that's probably their biggest problem. But at pretty much every person I talk to that says fasting didn't work for them, they were not fasting clean. And then I start talking about black coffee and they're like, oh, well, see, I could never do that. I could never drink black coffee. And so what's really the problem is fasting doesn't work if you're not really fasting. And if you're putting anything in your coffee, in your water, you are not really fasting. So if you think about it, if you were going to get fasted blood work or you were going to have surgery, you wouldn't tell the surgeon, well, I just put a little few drops of creamer in there because, you know, I saw a video that said it was okay. Now, your surgeon would be like, you're not having surgery. That's not fasting. So not fasting clean is one of the biggest problems. So we need to stick to black coffee. It needs to not be like, don't use the flavor. It shouldn't be hazelnut because the food flavors, and you don't add anything sweet in there. The sweetness and the food flavors make your brain think that we're about to have a glucose load come in. So we have something called the cephalic phase insulin response, and our pancreas pumps out some insulin. So we're kind of defeating the purpose of fasting. We want to have our insulin go down. And, you know, the good news is black coffee and plain tea. And by tea, I mean like actual tea. If you walk down the tea aisle, most of that is not really tea, actual tea. Black coffee and plain tea have a bitter flavor profile, and a bitter flavor profile does not cause a cephalic phase insulin response. So that's why we can have the black coffee and the plain tea, but you can also have plain water, plain sparkling water, none of the flavored stuff. Don't add any sweeteners, no kind of nut pod, this pod, whatever, no butter, all of that. Leave it all out. So when we're fasting clean, that makes a huge difference. And the second thing, when people say it didn't work, I say, well, tell me how you determined that it wasn't working. And it's usually some combination of they didn't give it very long and they perceived they were not losing weight at the speed at which they thought they might should lose weight. And so the thing about intermittent fasting is it is not quick weight loss. You know, if you want to lose weight really, really quick, I could tell you 20 ways to lose weight really, really quick. None of them are going to be sustainable and you're going to gain it all back. But you know, we're used to those quick weight loss approaches that do not work in the long run. Intermittent fasting is different. You know, I talked about metabolic flexibility. That doesn't happen on day two. You've got to train your body to tap into your fat stores. That's why I have the 28-day fast start part of Fast, Feast, Repeat. And so you can weigh and measure and do all that on day zero before you begin. And then you put the scale away for 28 days. You do not weigh because you're feeling slim today. No, you don't weigh again until day 29 because we're not expecting weight loss during the first 28 days. We're trying to become metabolically flexible. Then after that, you can start weighing if you would like. But the key is we're going to have a plan for weighing. You know, as well as I do, weight fluctuates a great deal from day to day. Mm-hmm. It has to do with how much food is in your system. Have you pooped today? You know, are you retaining water? Did you just work out and now your muscles have some inflammation? Because that's what happens after we work our muscles. We retain water in our muscles. So many things make our weight go up and down, up and down. We lose or gain fat very, very slowly, very slowly. So any sudden ups or downs, that is not fat gain, fat loss. That's just whatever else going on in your body. So you need to have a strategy for weighing so that you know what your overall trend is doing. So the time that intermittent fasting finally stuck for me, not coincidentally, was the only time that I used this strategy. I weighed daily, and then once a week, I calculated my weekly average. Like I literally did it on notebook paper. I wrote down every day's weight, and then every Friday, I added up all those weights divided by 7. Now, if I had only weighed 6 times that week, I would divide by 6. However, it's finding the average. We learned how to do that in elementary school. You can figure out how to do that by Googling it, but you need to find your average. You ignore all those variety of weights and only look at what that average did. You know, I have my actual numbers in Fast, Feast, Repeat in the Scale Schmail chapter, and I share, like, if I had only been weighing once a week on Friday, There was one example in there from my real weight history that my Friday weight was actually higher than the Friday before. But when you looked at my weekly average, it was down. So I knew that my trend was going down. So if I had just weighed on Friday, I'd have been like, I weigh more this week than I did last week. This doesn't work. But because I knew my trend was going down, I didn't quit. So it's just a matter of understanding intermittent fasting is not quick. What is your trend really doing? And you cannot know what your trend is doing if you just hop on the scale randomly. You just can't, because, you know, you could hop on the scale on a fluctuation day and your weight is 5 pounds higher than it was yesterday. And you don't know that your weight was down 5 pounds yesterday. You just know what you see today. Now you're like, well, this isn't working. And then you quit. And reality, maybe you've lost 3 pounds of fat, but you just can't see it in that fluctuation. So not fasting clean, not giving it time, and having unrealistic expectations, not knowing what your trend is actually doing. Those are the reasons people quit. And then they want to find something, you know, faster, because maybe their friend's on this new weight loss injection, losing weight like crazy because, you know, it's made her completely lose her appetite. Well, your friend is also losing a lot of muscle mass. And the minute she stops taking those shots, she's going to gain it all back plus more, except now she's gained back fat and not the muscle. So, you know, we want to have those quick fixes that our friends are having. But the reality is anything that is going to be good for your body long term is not a quick fix.
You are so right. I have patients that come to me and tell me my friend has on these shots. She has a 500 calorie diet and I just need to lose this weight. And I'm like, I am not the right person for you because I do not believe in that. I feel like it takes a lot more than that. And it's, you know, we have to make real changes for that to last. Yeah. And you brought up something about the muscle mass, which is something that we lose in menopause anyway.
Yes.
And our fat gets redispositioned and there's a lot of real changes going on. We do become more insulin resistant. Is there a specific way of fasting? Is there a better way of fasting to help with this insulin resistance that we experience during menopause?
There can be. Alternate daily fasting is great for insulin resistance. But here's what really is important to understand about as we have the menopausal transition, you know, and the younger me, like I wrote Fast, Feast, Repeat before I went through the menopausal transition. So were I writing it today in 2023, I would speak a little differently because now I understand about the hormonal changes. We are not taught as women. Like I remember before menopause, I thought I can't wait to go through menopause and then I won't have any more periods. That's all I thought. No more periods. That's going to be fabulous. And I didn't know that the estrogen, the progesterone were doing lots of other things in my body besides giving me periods. So, you know, I went through menopause. I'm cruising along. I'm not gaining weight, but I'm still a little thicker around the middle than I was prior to menopause. And I have a friend, thank goodness for my friend. She's an OBGYN. Her name's Dr. Tabitha Barber. And she's in a health and wellness community that I'm a part of. And, you know, she's a podcaster, but we had been to this event. We were in Utah and we were getting ready to go have dinner. And I was talking about my skin and, starting to get, you know, saggy skin and starting to look old. And she's like, well, are you doing hormone replacement therapy? And I said, no. She's like, oh, you got to do it. Because not having the estrogen and the progesterone, your skin you lose your skin elasticity. And then she started explaining to me and I was like, why has no one ever told me this before? And so then I started looking into it and learning more about it. And she was able to be my doctor also virtually. So she had me run the blood work. And it was so interesting because my A1C was higher than I'd ever seen it before. I was still fasting. I was eating well. And my A1C was like up practically to the pre-diabetic range. And I'm like, how is this possible? I haven't stopped intermittent fasting. How could this be going on? So then she explained it to me, obviously. And then I got started on bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. And again, I'm not a hormone expert, but my doctors are. So I got started on the right levels of estrogen and progesterone for my body. 3 months later, we rechecked my numbers. No change in diet, just the hormone replacement therapy. I was back to my normal self. My fasting insulin was back down to below 5 where it had been before. My A1C was back down to normal. I hadn't changed my diet, but suddenly my blood glucose management was back to what it should have been. So, you know, it kind of makes you mad when you think that, you know, for all those years we were cautioned, oh, no, women should not do hormone replacement therapy based on some not so great research on, you know, synthetic hormones that women were given way past the age of menopause. But it turns out if you talk to functional medicine doctors, OBGYNs, hormone experts who are functional medicine minded, they're pretty much in agreement that hormones help us age well. You know, I looked this up because I was just interested. I'm like, what was the life expectancy for women throughout all of history? And it was something like, I'm just trying to remember, I think it was like 48. Life expectancy for women was 48. Well, the average age of menopause is 51. So if you go back throughout time, our bodies were not designed to live, you know, as long as they're living. So you like, your body's like, all right, we're done now. Now you just die, right? But now we live in a different time. We can be healthy and vibrant. We're not, here we are, we want to be healthy and vibrant. We don't want to be old and dried up and sitting in a rocking chair. We want to be strong. We want to maintain our muscle mass. We want to maintain our bone density. And turns out those hormones didn't just give us periods. They helped us maintain our cardiovascular health and all of that. So I was like, well, you know, now we know.
You're right. You are right. The Women's Health Initiative studies that they did, I feel, did a big disservice to women. Yeah. All of these women stopped their hormones and all of these things happen. And really, you get hit all the time on that stuff. You know, well, what about cancer? What about this? It's like, you need to be educated and the benefits of estrogen. And one of those things is it does make insulin work better, which you actually saw in real time. But it improves our brain health, our bones, our skin, our heart, our blood vessels. It keeps our blood vessels wide. All of these positive things. So it does decrease insulin resistance and hopefully helping with that belly fat. I mean, obviously we need to fast and do some of these healthy other lifestyle choices. But also low progesterone can increase insulin resistance. Being androgen dominant can increase insulin resistance. So there's all of these different hormones that are really playing a part. And it just makes me sad that women often are just suffering in silence and they don't have that knowledge that, wow, I can actually do something about this. So I'm so glad you shared your hormone experience with me, because I know that's kind of, I don't know why it's still a controversial topic. I mean, they've pretty much proven that the Women's Health Initiative studies were really flawed. The women were older. You're correct. Synthetic hormones were used. So it just wasn't an accurate representation of hormone therapy.
It was a great example of how you can take something out of context and say something that is true, but meaningless. Like, for example, if you look at the two groups, the groups that did get the hormone therapy and the group that did not get the hormone therapy, they looked at how many people out of those two different groups, out of 1,000 in each group, let's just say, I think that was the number, 1,000 in each group, how many of them got breast cancer? Well, they found 25% higher incidence of breast cancer in the group that had the therapy. That sounds crazy until you look at those, the raw number. 4 people out of 1,000 versus 5 people out of 1,000. Okay. The difference was 1 person out of 1,000. The group that had the hormones that they deemed were dangerous had 1 more person out of 1,000 get breast cancer than the other group. So if you just look at it mathematically, 4 versus 5, okay, that's what was, you know, 25% increase. But it's 1 person out of 1,000. I think that's pretty important. That could have just been, you know, mathematical, statistical, coincidence.
Well, also, the women that actually just got estrogen therapy actually had a decreased risk of breast cancer. So that was brought out later that they, you know, didn't really emphasize during the studies. And also the women who received hormone therapy earlier, like it's, you know, ideally you're prescribing hormone therapy within 10 years of menopause and under 60. I mean, there's definitely exceptions, but the women that actually were getting it when they were supposed to, they actually had less dementia, less heart disease, and improved overall health and like quality of life. So all of that stuff got lost. Yeah. And I think that's just, you know, women, they ran with it. Doctors ran with it. The media ran with it. And it really hurt a lot of women. It did not help them at all. And I just think that's sad. And I'm so glad we're starting to have this conversation so that more women can be helped with that. But also this insulin resistance, I'm actually working on a course talking about just it's our nemesis of menopause. I mean, it's this belly fat, but it also increases our risk for heart disease and strokes and cancer. I mean, high insulin puts us at risk for cancer.
It's a growth. It makes us, you know, storing and growing, right? So we don't want to grow cancers. Yeah.
Right. It tells us to store all our calories as fat is how I tell my patients. It's like, we want to keep this low. But another thing with women, when we're talking about hormone therapy and breast cancer, aging in itself increases our risk for breast cancer. And think about alcohol. Drinking alcohol can increase our risk of breast cancer. Being overweight and obese, that increases our risk of cancer. So, which is why fasting is so important with that. What do you think about intermittent fasting? You talk about this fat adaptation. Is becoming fat adaptation the same as being metabolically flexible? Yes. Is it the same thing? Okay.
Yep. It's the same thing. Being fat adapted The whole idea of that really comes out of the keto community, but they're getting at it a different way. They're becoming fat adapted because they're like eating a lot of fat. And so their body is burning that fat versus when you're fasting, you become metabolically flexible and your body's burning your own fat. Like I would much rather burn fat that's already there than fat that I'm eating. So,
right. So with that, Jen, how long do we need to fast to get into that fat burning stage?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, I can interpret that question actually two different ways. Like how long do you need to be an intermittent faster before your body becomes fat adapted? Or what is the length of a fast every day that you need to do? Those are really two different questions. And so it takes bodies a different amount of time to become metabolically flexible. And of course, you know, I like to think of it like let's imagine you're in the middle of the forest. You started off, you were not in the forest. You walked into the forest and now you're in the forest. And you might say, how long is it going to take me to get out of the forest? Well, it depends on how far you walked into the forest, right? If you just walked into the forest a little bit, you'll get out pretty quick. But if you've been walking into that forest for 30 years, it's going to take you a while to walk back out. And so metabolic health is the same way. So if you have been battling obesity for a long time, you've been insulin resistant for years, you're going to have more forest to walk back out of. And so it might take your body longer. Whereas if you're someone who is metabolically healthy, you just want to lose some weight, you've struggled with, you know, 10 pounds that you would like to get off, but you've not ever really struggled with, you know, obesity, your body, you're not as far into the forest. Your body will be able to flip that metabolic switch probably sooner. So, you know, we have the 28-day fast start as an idea of, you know, just nailing the clean fast, giving your body time to adapt. But it can take bodies a lot longer than 28 days to become fat adapted or metabolically flexible. So there's that. And then the other question is, at what point during the day while we're fasting do we start to really burn the fat? That also is going to vary and it's going to depend. It'll depend on, you know, how much you ate the day before. Like if I had a really light meal in my eating window, and all I did was eat a tiny little meal, which I'm not going to do. I'm going to eat a big meal. But let's say I had a tiny little meal. You know, it doesn't take my body very long to process that tiny little meal and get through that fuel before it's like, all right. So really, like if I just only ate a boiled egg, for example, not recommended, don't do that. But if I only ate something tiny, my body would be done processing that and I would be burning fat much sooner. But if it's like Thanksgiving Day and you have Thanksgiving feast, your body has a lot more to process, a lot more to work on. And so it's going to take longer. One really great research study that I talk about in Fast, Feast, Repeat, they were watching fasting, what was happening hour to hour. And they found just typically, you know, these are not people that were intermittent fasters. These are people that were just doing like a 72-hour fast randomly. They'd not been fasting before. But they found that when they were watching, you know, their metabolic rate and their fat burning, that fat burning really ramped up between hours 18 and 24. It really had that increase in the curve. If you can picture, you know, it's going up, 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 and now it's going up more steeply. So we can pretty much guess that, you know, there's a period of time where we begin to, okay, now we flipped the metabolic switch. Now we're burning more fat.
Okay. Do you recommend fasting like every day, like starting out? Do we start at 12 hours? Do you recommend eating in a certain time window?
That's a great question.
And for women, is it for different? If it's different for women?
It really is not different for women than men, other than, again, we don't want to over-restrict. We don't want to accidentally over-restrict. Of course, men don't want to do that either. You know, it's not good for men to over-restrict and do that either. Our bodies do not do well with over-restriction. We saw that from the Biggest Loser study that people may remember, people talking about how, you know, all that Biggest Loser restriction, they may have lost a lot of weight, but it like crashed their metabolisms. That's not good. And, you know, the Minnesota starvation experiment that was done right after World War II, the profound over-restriction is really not good for our bodies metabolically. We don't want to do that. So what that looks like is going to be different for every person. So there is no like, here's the best eating window for you. here's the best length of time for your eating window, because it really just depends on you and how you prefer to eat. You know, we all have those friends who eat like a bird, right? They eat like tiny little bits. They just can only eat a little bit. That person would not do well with a 4-hour daily eating window. They would not be able to have enough nutrition in 4 hours to nourish their bodies. Whereas for me, I am more of a volume eater. A 5-hour daily eating window works really, really well for me. And I've been doing it long enough now that I know this is not overly restrictive for me. I nourish my body well. I get plenty of food. You know, I'm not continuing to waste away. I can grow muscle and this works great. But that is not a universal number. So you really have to, we have a saying in our community called tweak it till it's easy. You've got to figure out your easy, and it might not be the same as mine. You know, the time of day when your eating window falls, that's going to be different. You've got to figure out what feels good for you. So how do we know what that is? Well, in Fast, Feast, Repeat, and I have a new book coming out called 28 Day Fast Start Day by Day that really walks you through it even a little bit more. So it's like literally a day by day guide, like now it is day one, here's what you do. Now it is day two, here's what you do. And a little bit of a lesson every day from me. But you're starting off shrinking your eating window. And the what you do from day to day depends. You take a quiz to figure out your style and you choose the plan you want to follow. There's like an easy does it approach where you're really easing in slowly. Every week it gets just a little more fasting. And then there's a rip off the Band-Aid approach where even at the beginning, you're still eating, you know, within a pretty nice window at the beginning, and then you gradually shorten that throughout the 4 weeks of the fast start. But you know, you're not having to guess, and you don't start, you know, with the end on day one. You ease in, you're letting your body adapt, and you can always reassess and change what you're doing. You can say, well, you know, I thought I needed the easy does it approach, but this is actually pretty easy. I think I can do a little bit more. That's fine. Or you can say, well, I thought I wanted to rip off the Band-Aid, but this isn't working. You can scale back a little bit. You know, one thing about fasting, it is highly individual. And anybody who tells you, here's how everybody should do it, they're telling you what works for them, but that doesn't mean that's what's going to work for you. Other than fasting clean, which is a non-negotiable for everybody. You know, we have black coffee, plain tea, plain water, plain sparkling water, and that's it while we're fasting. Other than that, the rest is for you to figure out. You know, we have bio-individuality when it comes to what foods work best for our bodies. And that's the same for the length of your eating window and how long you're fasting.
I was literally going to ask you about that. I listened to another one of your podcasts, and we were talking about bio individuality, and I cannot agree more. Our bodies are different, and we get so hung up on this diet or that diet or this works when everybody's body responds differently to different foods. I think that's where the power of the continuous glucose monitor comes in. How your body's responding, our microbiome is different. Yep. You even mentioned how you don't clear fat as well as other people. So the high fat diet might not be right for different people.
It's really not. It's so interesting. There's a protocol called Zoe. Have you heard of Zoe?
I haven't done it, but I saw that you were doing it.
I've done it now twice, and it's super interesting. But that's how I determine that my body doesn't clear fat well. And it explains so much. Like our bodies are not the same, you know, like in so many ways. You know, like my body doesn't clear alcohol well. I learned that from genetic testing, but my body does clear caffeine well. So guess what? I can drink coffee all day and I'm fine. I no longer drink alcohol at all because my body is different. Other people clear it just fine. It's no big deal, but some people can't drink caffeine. Their body can't clear that. But with Zoe, I learned that my body does not clear fat well. So if I eat too much fat for my body, it's inflammatory. Now, does that mean I can't eat fat? No, I just can't eat too much fat for my body. My fat threshold's a little lower. Too much fat hangs around, becomes inflammatory for me. And I actually see that on the CGM, as it also impacts keeping my blood sugar higher if I eat too much fat. Does that mean I'm not going to eat any fat? No, fat is delicious. But it shows me why the keto diet never worked for me. I felt awful. I never felt satisfied. I got more and more puffy and inflamed, and I didn't lose weight. The diet that did work for me back in the day, the low-fat diet of the early 90s, I was skinnier than I am right now. Now I was eating a bunch of crap, not recommended. You know, we were doing it all wrong. You know, we were eating SpaghettiOs and fat-free bologna. I mean, what? No.
Right.
It was fake food. It was Franken food called Snackwells. It was terrible, terrible. I was not nourishing my body. I would never do that again. But my body responded really, really well to that. And I lost a lot of weight, like I said, and I was skinnier than I am right now. I didn't look healthy because I was not nourished very well. I wasn't getting any nutrients unless the ones they popped back in a SpaghettiOs, but that was not good for me. But, you know, it's just a matter of every single diet book that tells you what to eat was written by a human. And I bet you that is the combination of foods that works best for that particular human that wrote that book. So I could write, you know, the Jen Stevens diet, here's what I eat. And it would be the wrong diet for other people. So.
Right. And as we're talking, again, it sounds like, you know, the real magic and the fat burning isn't about what we're eating. It's when we're not eating that's doing the, you know, the work.
Well, it can't be about what you're eating. Because if I, you know, if you eat too much, and you know, if my window were too long and I ate too much, my body would never get through, you know, it stores away the extra, you know. Fasting has many things about it that are magical, right? The things that happen in the fasted state. But it's not so magic that we can overeat and still lose weight. So you got to find that balance. And so you got to think, okay, so that's why the 5-hour window works really well for me. I can eat till I'm satisfied, no counting of anything in a 5-hour period. And I do not eat so much that my body stored more than it can get through by the next day, if that makes sense. So if I were constantly overeating, and for me, fat tends to be the thing that I store more easily. Fat from eating too much and too much dairy. Like I love cheese, I love butter, I include them. But there was a period of time right around, I don't know, when was that? Right around 2020, 2019, maybe 2019, I started making myself a lot of cheese plates. a lot of cheese plates. My honesty pants got a little tighter. I'm like, what could be different? I'm like, oh, I've been eating a lot of cheese. So I just started eating something different, some hummus instead, hummus and pita bread. And then, nope, now my honesty pants fit again. So what you eat does make a difference, but you don't have to like be restrictively crazy about it, if that makes sense.
Right. I totally agree. You can't be, you know, eating a lot of inflammatory foods and stuff that's awful for you. That's not a free-for-all. I mean, obviously there's, you know, you want to eat healthy still in your window.
Yep.
Definitely. Yeah. Because the ultra processed foods and all that stuff, you know, it's tough to take when we're going through this menopausal stage. Yeah. You know, we just got to stay away from it. Also, when insulin declines, our gut microbiome diversity changes. So it really influences our gut too. Mm-hmm. How does fasting positively impact our gut microbiome?
Well, it's really, it's fascinating. There's some great research on this. And of course, we're learning more about the gut every single day. You know, the scientists continue to learn more because it's really still kind of in its infancy, what people are learning about the gut. It's because we're able to sequence what the gut microbiome, whereas, you know, 20 years ago, they couldn't do that. So basically, fasting tends to promote a healthy gut microbiome. It tends to support the healthy ones that we want to encourage to thrive and kind of helps like starve out the bad ones, right? The ones we do not want to flourish. So it gives our gut time to rest and repair as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had SIBO, leaky gut. I was a complete mess, but fasting fixed it. Along with the couple, I did some glutamine and some other things. So that combination worked. But I was reading up on the changes that happen hormonally with the gut. I found it so interesting. And fasting appears to play a really positive role in our gut. Let me ask you this. When people get to that set goal or, okay, I've lost this weight, this is where I'm at. How do you recommend maintaining it with fasting? Or do you need to change up the window of fasting to prevent plateaus? Or how do you address those things?
Well, when you get to your goal, that's, you know, really where that you're your own study of one, and you basically pay attention to what you use, whatever metric you like. For me, it's my honesty pants. I know what my body is doing. I know when they're getting a little tight, and I don't weigh, but I can just tell from my clothes, you know, with my face and getting a little puffy. I just know, because it's been a lot of years now. But maintenance is not like a goal weight and now you're that weight. Like, let's say my goal was 129 and now I'm 129 and I'm just 129 forever. That is not how maintenance actually looks. Maintenance is not a weight. Maintenance is a range. You're going to fluctuate within a range. And in maintenance, we have seasons where our weight might creep up, like my cheese plate era, or I was eating a lot of cheese plates. It's like, whoop, you got to like course correct a little bit. Yeah. And so it's just a matter of keeping an eye on what's happening somehow, whether you're still weighing daily, whether you're, you know, using your clothes, whatever your strategy is, for really being honest with what your weight is doing, not getting freaked out. You know, I had to stop weighing in maintenance just because the fluctuations gave me diet brain. If I got on the scale and my weight was up 3 pounds, I knew that I did not gain 3 pounds of fat overnight. But, you know, I think a lot of us have diet trauma from the past. And so you can like start being like, oh my God, I'm regaining all the weight. I'm going to gain it all back. This is just the beginning. And so I'm like, it wasn't healthy for me to see the numbers anymore. So I've been able to, you know, many years now not weighing, and it works for me. But other people don't have that association with the scale. And weighing frequently is a great way to keep their eye on that. But you have the tools in your toolbox. It's a matter of, well, I might need to have, you know, I've had a little window creep over the summer, perhaps. My window's got a little longer. Oh, it's time to shorten them back up just a little bit. Or, you know, maybe I've been gravitating to eating at restaurants more so than I need to. We know about eating in restaurants. The food is richer. There's more of it. You're more likely to eat more food if you're eating at a restaurant. So, it's time to eat at home, make my food at home for a while. So you have the tools: eating window length, fasting length, what you're eating, how much you're eating, quality of what you're eating, you know, the ultra processed foods, that sort of thing. Eating real food, find, you know, the foods that work for you. And for me, you know, I will never go on a diet again, but I learned a lot of things over all those decades of dieting. Like I mentioned before, my body does better with less fat. So if I found myself gaining a little weight and my honesty pants are tight, I can maybe back off the butter, back off the cheese, maybe make a soup without adding the heavy cream to it, that sort of thing. So we want to enjoy our life and just figure out how to settle in, and we can do it.
Right. What is it? What does your window look like?
Well, it's not always the same. Usually, as a rule of thumb, I open at some point after 2. It just depends on what I'm doing. It's 2 o'clock right now. In fact, it's 2:01. We're recording this and I'm here.
Like, I
haven't opened my window yet. So I have more work to do about after we're done. So I'll probably have a little shorter window today. But then yesterday, or the day before yesterday, I had a longer window because I was at my sister's. We had a bridal shower for one of our nieces. And I had a long window with lots of different foods that I don't normally eat. And it balances out. So probably I tend to have an average of about a 5-hour window, which is really what I did when I was losing weight as well. So there's flexibility, a little more flexibility in maintenance than there was when I was trying to lose weight. Because when you're trying to lose weight, you need to burn your fat that you already have stored. So you got to give your body time to need to burn the fat. You know, we don't want to be in energy balance when we're trying to lose weight. But I'm at the point now with maintenance that I am in energy balance, and that is my goal. So one thing about our appetite is it will adjust. You know, I got a little hungrier once I got to my goal. My body's like, all right, eat a little more. And so you eat a little more to make up for that fat that you're not burning anymore. It all worked out. If you begin living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and you're fasting clean and you really learn to listen to your body, it's not that hard. And that's hard for people to understand. They're like, but it's been so hard. But you really can learn to listen to your body. You really can get back in balance. You know, animals in nature, not the ones being fed by humans, but animals in nature, they know how to balance what they eat. They do not become obese left on their own. it's just like my cat, I have two obese cats. One of them is diabetic, eating the cat food, you know. But when
my cats love treats,
when we're eating the way nature intended, nature was not intending for us to eat, you know, all the junk. The ultra processed food is not in nature. There's no Dorito bush. But if we're eating the real foods that our bodies are designed to eat, we get the signal that we've had enough or that we need more. And we can listen to that.
I love what you said. You were, I guess you started a new segment on your podcast, and yes, it's the why. I love that. I listened to it. And I think that you could speak to that a little bit, having a why behind why you're doing something. For me, when I decided to change my lifestyle, I was in pain, I was suffering, I was stressed out, burnt out, sick. I started to think about that. Do I want to die young like my parents? Do right. I want to be here for my four kids? I've got to change something. So that was my why. So I love that you've included that in your podcast as a segment and listening to women and their why for doing fasting and making these changes. That's awesome.
Well, in my new book, 28 Day Fast Start Day by Day, which comes out December 26th, 2023, before people even begin the fast start, they craft their why statement, because that's really, really important. People who tend to quit, again, one thing they have in common is their only why is I need to lose weight as fast as I can. If your only why is I need to lose weight as fast as I can, then you may not be ready for intermittent fasting. I'm going to say that again. And I think intermittent fasting is amazing, but you have to be ready for it. Because if you come into it with the idea of I want to lose weight as fast as I can, and the intermittent fasting is going to get me there as fast as I can, then you're not going to have a strong enough why to carry you through on those days when the scale pops back up a couple pounds and you're frustrated and your friend is now dropping weight like crazy because she's taking diet drugs. You need to have something beyond the weight loss. Now, can losing weight be part of your why? 100%. I think it should be. If you have weight to lose, losing weight should be part of your why, but it can't be the only thing. You have to understand all the things intermittent fasting can do for you. It's kind of, you know, like brushing your teeth and sleeping well every night and moving your muscles. You know, all those things work together to give us a healthy body so that we age well. None of them are in isolation. It works together. And intermittent fasting and nourishing your body and getting a good night's sleep and brushing your teeth and all of that is going to help you live longer and healthier. We don't just want to live a long time. We want to be healthy while we do it.
Exactly. And all of our hormones work together. We're all, it's all one big system. So
it's true.
Jen, tell people where they can find you, and can we pre-order your new book? What's going on with that?
You can pre-order it right now, wherever books are sold, 28 Day Fast Start Day by Day. And I'm going to tell you, you also need Fast Feast Repeat, because 28 Day Fast Start Day by Day is a companion book. But the thing about Fast Feast Repeat is it is a lot of information. So when you're doing 28 Day Fast Start Day by Day, you start off, you're just getting just what you need at the time. And then when you're done with the 28 Day Fast Start, now you're going to go back and you're going to read Fast Feast Repeat all the way through. And it's going to sink in. Remember, I'm an elementary teacher. I know how to deliver content, and you need repetition. You know, we don't just teach long division one time in fourth grade and then move on. No, you have repetition. You come back to it. Learning takes time. And so 28 Day Fast Start Day by Day gets you started. Going back to Fast Feast Repeat, you really start to understand. I would even go back and read it again, maybe 6 months in, because then you're going to see things you didn't notice the first time or you didn't understand it. You're like, oh yeah, that is exactly what happens every day when you know, I get to hour 16 or whatever. And so you start to understand it better. So start with 28 Day Fast Start Day by Day. Fast Feast Repeat will then be the one that gets you through. It's got the frequently asked questions for every step along the way. Any question that you have is probably in there. And if you're looking for me, you can go to jenstevens.com and connect to everything that I do. Jen is like gin and tonic. Stevens is with a PH, jenstevens.com. I have a community where we support intermittent fasters. It's not on Facebook. It's a paid community, and it's a really nice place to be. And it's like $9.99 a month. So
You well, I like what you said, because I heard you got off Facebook, but you said if people are going to pay, they're not going to be hating in there.
So they're that's not. You're going to save so much money on lattes that, you know, in 1 week of less lattes, you can join the community and we'll be there for you because we understand the process and we've all been there. We've all been through it. And so it's a great place for that. But $9.99 a month, we'll keep out the people who are going to cause trouble. They're not going to pay $9.99 a month. $9.99 a month. They're on Facebook causing trouble in a free group.
You're right about that. Awesome. Is there anything else that we didn't talk about? Any other takeaways you want to leave listeners with?
I just want to remind everybody that our bodies are wise. You know, when I did all those crazy diets, they got harder and harder over time, and I felt worse and worse over time. Fasting is different. The longer you do it, it's literally like riding a bicycle. It's easy. It's like walking down the street. It's like you just live it and do it. You don't have to think about it. It's not stressful and it feels good. You don't have that point. Once you're adapted and you're in your routine and you're listening to your body and you're nourishing yourself well, you feel so good that you're like, hey, this really is a lifestyle and I could do it forever. But you got to be patient with your body as it gets there. That doesn't happen on day one. But this has the potential to change your life if you just let it. And don't start, you know, you can really go down a lot of rabbit holes. There's a lot of bad information out there. But you can trust yourself. You can trust how you feel. You know, I don't care who says what. I am healthier now at 54 than I was when I was 210 pounds. And my blood work shows it. So is fasting bad for me? No. I mean, my body is thriving. And so trust yourself and how you're feeling.
That's awesome. That's awesome, Jen. Thank you so much for being here again. I love talking to you. I love learning from you. And I just really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Jen.
Thank you for joining me on the Midlife Wellness MP podcast, where we explore the various aspects of women's health during the menopause transition and beyond. I hope you found today's discussion insightful and empowering. Remember, your well-being is a priority, and I'm here to support you on your journey to a healthier, happier, and fulfilling midlife. Stay tuned for more engaging conversations and valuable insights. Wishing you good health and wellness. Until next time.